My name is Jonathan Ziering. I'm the Sgan Rosh Beit Midrash of the YU Termitzion Beit Midrash Zichron Dov in our full name, but the YU Kollel in Toronto. So as Reisbitz told me, the theme of today was supposed to be Churban Bayit Sheni. I wanted to focus just for like 20 minutes on a very surprising Midrash, which I want to try to pick apart and see if we can get at what Chazal are really saying. So if I asked you, you know, to sort of pick the moment in Jewish history when we started the descent towards Churban Bayit Sheni, towards the destruction. Right, what moment would you pick? Right, you can pull on Tanakh, Jewish history, Chazal, whatever you want. Right, but when would you say that we started? Yeah, or you're just moving your hand. I won't.
Towards Churban Bayit Sheni.
Bayit Sheni. Right. When did? Right. What? Like, what moment would you point to? There's a lot of places you could start. It's not just like one right answer. Right, but where would you start?
Hashmonaim taking the throne?
That's early. But I mean, it could be.
See when the Greeks
I mean, that's pretty early, right? It could be, yeah. Sorry, just, right, if we wanted, you know, to figure out when did we sort of start the descent towards the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash? Like, when did it start? And you can ask it at different levels, right? In the political level, and you could ask it on the religious level. Right now, in a religious level, even at Yulchan Chazal, there are different answers, right? In the famous Gemara we learn on Tisha B'Av, the answer is, right, Kamsa Bar Kamsa, is that the Sinat Chinam in the years leading up to the Churban HaBayit, right? You might answer politically, right, that it was as we started to rebel against Rome. You might throw it earlier, right, when Rome rose to power. Yeah?
I don't actually know, like, what happened between those times, but I'm like, thinking maybe when we started, like, late with the Goyim. That's
what I think
started. I don't know if that's
happening, but that would be. So there wasn't, there was to an extent, though. That's, you know, that's more in the Hanukkah story, honestly, which it may be in a certain sense that is the beginning, right? That's sort of a midpoint where we have like some level of sovereignty. But Chazal in one midrash have a very surprising answer to this question. In a Gemara in Shabbos and appears in Sanhedrin as well. So I'll read it to you, because it's if you don't realize what it's saying, then you'll miss the entire point of it. So it says, Amar Yudam Shmuel, Bisha'ash Nasa Shlomo et Bad Paro. When Shlomo married Bad Paro. So this happens already in Malachim Perek Gimel. Right, so in the beginning of Malachim, so David is still king. Adonio is one of his sons, tries to claim his place as crown prince. But through Bathsheba and Natan, Shlomo is made to be the king. And then, he, in Perek Bet of Melachim, Shlomo carries out his father's last wishes, carries out revenge against Yoav and others. And then in Perek Gimel, Shlomo emerges as the powerful king who really establishes Yerushalayim and the Jewish empire, as it were. And the first thing he does as king is he marries the daughter of Paro. Now, he is the only person in all of the Middle East ever, as far as we know, to have even claimed to marry the daughter of Paro. Mitzrayim didn't give out its daughters to other powers, right? Marrying the daughter of a king was a sign that you were subservient to them. It's a political marriage where whoever the king married, so that kingdom was second to him. So Egypt never gave out its, in political marriage, their children to anyone. Shlomo was the only person to even claim such a thing. But in Perek Gimel, he is such a powerful monarchy that he marries Bat Paro. Now, in Perek Gimel, this is totally fine. Perek Gimel, nothing happens quite yet. But in Perek Yud Aleph, after Shlomo builds the Beit HaMikdash, after Shlomo does everything he does, which is great, by Perek Yud Aleph, he hasn't just married Bat Paro, he has 1,000 wives at that point, and his wives lead his heart astray, and he begins to either worship Avodah Zarah or allow Avodah Zarah to exist, and Hashem gets angry at Shlomo and decrees the Pilug HaMelacha, that the kingdom will be split under his son into two kingdoms of Yehuda and Yisrael, Yehuda staying with his son Rechavam, and then Yeravam ben Nevat taking the Malchut Yisrael. And Chazal point to that moment and say, "Bisha'ash and Nasa Shlomo bat Paro, hichnisa lo elef minei zemer." So that night, their wedding night, she brought in 1,000 instruments. Va'amra lo kachosim lavodazara plonit. V'kachosim lavodazara plonit. This is how you play piano for this Avodah Zarah, and this is how you play the guitar for that Avodah Zarah. And Amar v'lo michaba, and he didn't stop her. So Amar Rav Yehuda bar Shmuel b'shash and asash lamod bar Paro. At that moment when he married the daughter of Paro, Yarad Gavriel v'naatz kana b'yam. So Gavriel came down from Shemayim and he put a reed in the sea. V'alah bosh sirto, and it began to accumulate sediment. Right, meaning it began to collect dirt. V'alav, that began to turn into an island. Nivne krach gadol shel Romi. Rome eventually was built on that sort of island that formed in the ocean.
Are there a bunch of magician like that, like in other like points where they say put like something in the sea?
Correct. The next line is b'matnita tana. The next line is also ota yom shechnis yiravam shnei aglei zahav echad beit el echad bedan ibnet zrif echad v'zeu italia shel yavan. Going one generation later, Italy is built. Italia shel yavan is built when Yiravam introduces his agalim to replace the Beit Hamikdash. Now that midrash is very strange for a lot of reasons. I mean, first of all, let's just establish that what it's not saying is that literally, when Shlomo married Bat Paro, the punishment was that Rome began to actually be created, and like a new island was formed. For many reasons, the Avad Eitan goes through them in great detail. He notes, and there's a lot of problems with this midrash as pshat. First of all, we know that Rome existed before. Right, like the physical landmass of Italy existed before the time of Shlomo. And besides for that, Italy is not an island. Right? It's just not an island. Right? You can get to it by land. Right? So obviously the Midrash isn't literal. Right? What the Midrash is highlighting is that there's something about when Shlomo married the daughter of Paro that led to the downfall of Yerushalayim in the time of Rome. Right? Meaning Korban Bayit Sheni. But this is a really strange claim by Chazal, because if you think about it, what happened? There's a few important things that happened between the moment that Shlomo married Bat Paro and Churban Bayit Sheni. Right? Most notably, the first Beit HaMikdash, which Shlomo built, the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, the building of the second Beit HaMikdash. Right? There's a lot that happened. And yet, for some reason, Chazal see the seeds of the destruction, not of Churban Bayit Rishon, but of Churban Bayit Sheni, in Shlomo's marriage to Bat Paro, which happened when, as Jacob said, before even the building of Bayit Rishon. Right, which is a very strange thing to say. And Chazal say, reiterate this in a different Gemara. In Nida Daf Ayin, the Gemara says as follows. They raise a contradiction. Katuv echad omer, ki vachar Hashem b'tzion. And the pasuk in Tehillim says that Hashem chose Tzion, He chose Yerushalayim. V'katuv echad omer, ki alapi v'al chamati hayta ha'ir hazot l'min hayom asher banu ota ad hayom hazeh. My wrath was set against Yerushalayim from the day that you built it until now. So Chazal say, which is it? Does God love Yerushalayim? Or the way Yirmiyahu says it, not just does God not love Yerushalayim, He hated it from the minute it was built. So they say, no, it's not a problem. Come kodem shenasa Shlomo et Bat Paro. Kan lachar shenasa Shlomo et Bat Paro. It depends. Was it before or after he married Bat Paro? So Chazal, again, they reiterate and they say, Yerushalayim was all perfect and God loved it. And the Beit HaMikdash would have been great in that first, like, 2-3 years of Shlomo's reign. But even before the Beit HaMikdash, the first one, was built, there was something that already existed that would lead to the downfall of the Batei Mikdash, that would ensure, and I think this is what Chazal is getting at, that Yerushalayim couldn't be eternal. I think that's what they're saying, right? They're not saying, and obviously the first Beit HaMikdash was built between this time, right? Again, he married Bat Paro, then he builds the Beit HaMikdash, then that's there for over 400 years, and then it gets destroyed, and then you have Galut number one, and then you build the second Bayit, and then you go through another few hundred years, and only then does Rome become relevant. So Chazal clearly aren't, right? Chazal, if they're saying, they're seeing the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, the second Beit HaMikdash in Shlomo, what they're really telling you is that there's something fundamentally wrong about the culture that began already under Shlomo, that would inevitably lead to its destruction. Now, what I don't think they're saying, and I'll be careful here, I don't think what they're saying... What? Well, that's what the Yirmiyahu says. Right, and that's why I think it's not literal, right? It's not, you know, I don't think Yirmiyahu was saying it literally. But Yirmiyahu was saying there's something about the culture in Yerushalayim that Shlomo already began, as Chazal are adding, that he didn't like. There was something wrong. Now, I don't think, and I'll write, I don't think what they could possibly mean is that it was totally corrupt from the beginning and therefore it's not worth keeping it, right? That's obviously not true. We like Yerushalayim. In fact, we had two Batei Mikdash before the destruction came. It can't mean that it was so totally corrupt from the beginning that it's not worth having Yerushalayim. Because you're right, we hope for Yerushalayim. And not just hope, we had two Batei Mikdash there in the interim, right? In the 1,000 years from that, almost, from that point till Churban Bayit Sheni, Yerushalayim was a great place. Like, there was a long time where the Beit HaMikdash stood and it was good. So I think Chazal can't quite be saying that. What I think they're saying is not really that it was full of sin already, that everything was corrupt. What they're saying is that nothing happens in a vacuum. Like, nothing happens in a vacuum. It's not that. It's not like everything is perfect for 1,000 years and then you wake up one morning and everything is corrupt. If it turns bad at the end, then you have to look back and you have to see, when did that start? It's not that it was corrupt from the beginning. Yerushalayim was great. But just because things are great doesn't mean there's not something hiding there. Doesn't mean that there's not something that, if you don't make sure that it doesn't spin out of control, that it won't turn bad. So let's look at Shlomo's life. Just Shlomo's life for a moment. Right? Shlomo's life, when he first married Bat Paro, and Chazal are saying this is a terrible, terrible sin. But obviously it's not so terrible, because the next perek is Shlomo building the Beit HaMikdash and Hashem coming to him in a dream, and, well, that's that perek actually, and making him the smartest man who ever lived. Right? It can't be that Shlomo was such a terrible sin when he married Bat Paro that he's not worthy of building the Beit HaMikdash, because after he marries Bat Paro, Hashem makes him the smartest person. He allows him to build the Beit HaMikdash. That Beit HaMikdash stands for over 400 years. They can't be saying that he was fully corrupt. What I think they have to be saying is that there was the beginning of something. Now, in Shlomo's own life, we know that marrying Bat Paro spins out of control. Right? Marrying Bat Paro spins out of control. The beginning of his life. So he married Bat Paro in a political marriage and it strengthened his melucha. At the end of his life, it wasn't just Paro anymore, it was another 999 wives, none of which, to the best of our knowledge, were Jewish. But we don't know of a single Jewish wife he had, so by the end, sure, his 1,000 idolatrous wives led him astray. Now, the single wife may not have done it, but it did start a process which, had Shlomo stopped it and said, look, I married Bat Paro, I've done my political marriage, I'm strong enough, I can move on, maybe it would have been fine. But he didn't. And once he didn't, you can look back to the beginning and say there was something, right, poisonous at the beginning. But still the question is, okay, well, what is it? I mean, what is that core little thing that Chazal saw that spun out of control that they're saying is responsible in the end of the day, not just for Churban Bayit Rishon, but Bayit Sheni? Meaning, what is it about the culture of Yerushalayim that was already apparently imperfect? Not terrible, but imperfect, such that it couldn't last forever. So here, I think the key lies with a comment that the Ben Yehoyada, the Ben Ish Chai, makes on the Gemara and Shabbos. And he says, it's sort of strange, why would Chazal say that when Shlomo married Bat Paro, Gabriel came and planted Rome by planting a kaneh, a reed in the sea? Right? I mean, if I was building I don't know exactly how one would build an island, but why would you build an island with a kaneh, right? It can't be that they chose that randomly, right? There has to be something, right? It has to be symbolic of something. This whole midrash is highly symbolic. So what is it symbolic of? So he said, okay, well, where does kaneh come from? There is another place where kaneh is very important in Tanakh. And not only is it important in Tanakh, but it also becomes important with another key character in the Shlomo story, right? What? So Paro's dream, right? Meaning it connects both kaneh and Mitzrayim. And then there's an even more striking place, which is also about Kaneh and also about Mitzrayim, which is, it appears 3 times in Tanakh, in Melachim, in Yeshayahu, and in Divrei HaYamim. So a little backstory. Rav Shakeh. So what happens? Okay, backstory. Chizkiyahu is the best king who ever lived. Him or Yoshiel. Chizkiyahu is amazing. We love Chizkiyahu. He's the hero of Melachim. Right? Him and Yoshio are the only two kings after David that get things right. They get rid of Avodah Zarah, they get rid of the Bamot, they reconsecrate Yerushalayim, the Beit HaMikdash, they bring everyone to Avodah Hashem. Everything is great. And the Sancheiriv, and they rebel against Sancheiriv, right? Chizkiyahu rebels against Assyria. And Assyria surrounds him, and he's terrified. And Sancheiriv sends his general, Rav Shakeh, to make fun of them and say, what are you doing? Why are you rebelling against Assyria, the greatest power who ever lived? Who exactly is going to defend you? Now, if you stop a moment right there, what does that moment sound like it's going to be? What could have happened in the time of Chizkiyahu? Churban HaBayis, Churban Yerushalayim. Right, that's exactly what's about to happen. Yerushalayim is surrounded by the superpower, Assyria, and they're about to destroy it. And Rav Shakeh says, do you think you can prevent the destruction of Yerushalayim? I can't believe that you think that. There's only two reasons you might think that you can survive this onslaught on Yerushalayim. One is that you rely on God. But that's just ridiculous. God can't stop me. The other possibility is you rely on
Egypt.
Egypt. And what does he call them?
Meratzutz.
Right, Mishenet Kanei Ratzutz. Right, Mishenet Kanei Ratzutz. Right, a support of a weak reed. And so the Ben Ish-Chai said, yeah, I'm adding now to the Ben Ish-Chai. If you think about the first Korban HaBayit that never happened, that happened under Chizkiyahu. And why didn't it happen? Because Rav Shakeh told him there are two possibilities for Yerushalayim to stand. One is God. Two is Mitzrayim. Meaning one is, do you trust God? Two is, do you trust political power? Right? Rav Shakeh ignored God and said it must be that you're relying on political might and political alliances with Mitzrayim. Chizkiyahu prevents Korban HaBayit because he didn't rely on Mishenet Kanei Ratzutz. Who did he rely on? The other one, right? On God, who Rav Shakeh thought it was impossible to rely on. But it turns out that God makes an ace, and Sancheiriv's army is dead in the morning. Shlomo HaMelech was promised by God an empire, right? To follow the Davidic dynasty. He would build the Beit HaMikdash. He would be unique among all nations. And what's the first thing he does before he even builds the Beit HaMikdash? He marries Bat Parao. He says, the first thing that I need to establish my kingdom is political might, is Mitzrayim. I think what Chazal are doing is they're pointing to that moment and they're saying, look, if you want to understand everything that happened, it's true. Bayit Rishon was destroyed because of Avodah Zarah and Gilui Aruch Shlichut Damim and all the politics that were behind it. And Bayit Sheni was destroyed because of Rome and Senat Chinam. There's so many things that happened between Bayit Rishon and Bayit Sheni. That's true. But if you want to understand the one thing that Yerushalayim needs to survive, so you need to contrast two figures. Chizkiyahu, who actually prevented Churban HaBayit, who stood at Churban Yerushalayim and managed to survive against all odds, and every other king who was imperfect. Right? Every other king who, besides for Yoshiyahu and Chizkiyahu, no one was ever as good as Shlomo, and Shlomo wasn't perfect. Right? Shlomo sins. If you want to understand the difference between the only two people who could save Yerushalayim, Chizkiyahu and Yoshiyahu, and specifically Chizkiyahu, who stood at that moment of Churban and survived, and all the other kings who were at best following Shlomo, you have to understand that first moment. The sin was that in the end of the day, he didn't really, 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 ad hasof, believe that for Yerushalayim to stand, it needs to be Yer Hashem, that he needs to rely only on God. Now, it's true. Shlomo wasn't terrible, right? He just wasn't perfect. And many of the kings weren't terrible. But once you don't trust that Yerushalayim is unique, you don't believe that the secret to Yerushalayim is God, then it may be that you'll only deviate a little bit. Or it may be that you'll deviate a lot. You may get caught up in all types of the terrible political alliances that all Nevi'im Achronim scream about over and over, the reason Bayit Rishon was destroyed. And if you read all the stories of Korban Bayit Sheni, you'll get caught up all of your political infighting. Right? Should we fight the Romans? Should we not fight the Romans? Should we be the zealots? Should we be the rabbis? But if you think about it, what is the one core issue that permeated Bayit Rishon, Bayit Sheni, then at the end of the day explains why even already at the beginning, we never managed to make Yerushalayim 100% perfect. And then eventually it spiraled out of control. As if you look at the marriage of Bat Paro, and you realize that, yeah, already at the beginning, Shlomo had a chance to make it perfect and say, we are different, this is unique, this stands on God. And that moment he deviated ever so slightly, he married Bat Paro and put politics before God. So sure, in his time, it didn't destroy the political system. A generation later, it led to Bilug HaMelucha. And 800, 900 years later, it led to the fighting of the Kanaim and the rabbis in Yerushalayim, arguing about what is the best way for us to survive this, right? Is it to fight against all odds, to fight against each other, or is it to trust in God and maybe, you know, swallow whatever we need to swallow to survive? But I think Chazal are pointing out that nothing beats. If they're not saying that Yerushalayim from the beginning was terrible, they're saying it wasn't perfect. They're saying in order for Yerushalayim to be 100% successful, to be eternal, to not have any korban, you need to be chizkiyahu. You need the person who can say Yerushalayim is unique. It's not about politics. It transcends politics. We don't need anything else. If you understand that, then everything else will fall into place. If you don't understand that and you put politics before God, then everything will just unravel eventually. Because if Yerushalayim is like any other city, we're not so politically powerful. It's only when you recognize that Yerushalayim is supposed to be totally unique, totally the city of God, will you be able to create the city that's really, really the Makom HaShechina. And so Chazal are telling you that if you want to understand how all this has happened, it started not through a big, great sin. It started with that little deviation of marrying Bat Paro before he built the Beit HaMikdash, of putting politics before God. And if you understand that, then you'll understand how it unraveled and why everything followed from there. Because even the slightest deviation, right? You know, as we all know, right? If you're going in a straight line, so everything will go straight. But if you turn off at a little, even the slightest things, they're torn. The time of Shlomo wasn't so bad. But 1,000 years later, right? Look at where it came to, right? There, if you're traveling in that direction, so sure, 1,000 years later, it will have spun out of control. I think that's what Chazal are really trying to do, is to help you understand that nothing happens in a historical or you know, historical, theological, or political vacuum, right? Cultures can become, right, problematic if at the beginning they aren't pure, right? And if you don't fix the mistakes when they're small, then they'll just spin out of control. And so in order to make you feel how much Yerushalayim is tied up in this long historical and theological story, when they want you to think about Korban HaBayit, they tell you, if you really want to understand the problems with Yerushalayim, which looked so bad at the end, realize they didn't start when they were so bad. They started from the very little thing all the way the day it was built. Right? And if you really want to fix it, therefore you have to not just reverse all the terrible things, right, that you see in Korban Bayit Rishon and Bayit Sheni. You have to try to work on the basics. Because if you work on the basics, everything else falls into place. If you're able to have that emunah, that Yerushalayim is unique, it's about God and not about just politics, it's something transcendent, you'll have the koach to really change all the other problems, which in the end are really just derivative of that basic deviation at the beginning. So with that...